It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is January 19th, and this is the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. And welcome into Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. My name is Evan Marinofsky. I hope you guys are having a great, great week. Last night, obviously, Bruins played the Islanders. I don't know the score yet. And Connor and I, who was on today's episode, we prefaced that we recorded it before the game, so obviously we don't know the results. But on this episode, Connor and I dove into sort of what's wrong with the Bruins, and then we get into what's right. And what's right? And we sort of went back and forth on each thing and how the Bruins can fix their issues, which again, only two games into the season, or at least we were basing off our podcast off of two games. So obviously there will be a third when you listen to it, maybe listen to it later in the week and there's a fourth. Maybe you're listening 3 weeks from now and there's a bunch. So we're just basing it off the two games against the Devils, which had their bad parts and their good parts. And we discussed both. And it was, again, just fun to have games to talk about again. This is the first podcast we've had games to talk about since, like, September. We will take that. You will take that. Everyone will take that. Before we get into the episode, go subscribe to Bruins Ringside on YouTube. Maybe you're watching this or you will watch this on Bruins Ringside on YouTube. But we have everything over there. Analysis videos, player interviews, pressers, podcasts, everything. And we're going to start doing live podcasts. We're going to start doing live post-game shows. We're starting doing a lot of stuff over there, and I'd love to have you over there and come hang out and do some Bruins stuff. It'll be fun. And then also, before we get into the episode, are you ready for some intense-ass football? NFL, right now, conference championship time upcoming this weekend. You have the Buccaneers with Tom Brady. You have the Packers with Aaron Rodgers. Then the other side, you have the Chiefs, and you have the Bills. And it is interesting. It is fun. And there's only one place that has you covered for that and one place that I trust, and that's betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use that promo code CLNS50 for your 50% welcome bonus. Also, hockey. Hockey's back, as you can tell. Go bet on hockey. There's a lot of fun futures bets. There's a lot of good just day-to-day bets and betting on the games. Go do that. It makes the game so much more fun when you have a stake in it. And don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use that promo code CLNS50 to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Connor Ryan. And we're here with Connor Ryan. Connor, what is up?
Evan, I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a Monday morning. I want to preface the show by saying this. There is a game Monday night against the Islanders that we will have not seen. We recorded this prior to the game. So this happened to us quite a bit last year.
Yes.
Where we would talk before a game, talk about all these issues, and that night those issues would, you know, seemingly be fixed. And then people would be listening to a show that was on issues that were already fixed. So I'd like to preface that by saying we're going to go over some issues after the first two games against the Devils. And somehow, by hook or crook, the Bruins are going to score like 8 5-on-5 goals against the Islanders on Monday
night. Expected.
As expected. But nevertheless, I'm pumped. I'm just happy to have hockey back. And by the way, for people who are watching on YouTube, I have a cut on my finger.
Oh, what happened? Through it.
I don't know. I was getting ready this morning, and all of a sudden, there was this like blood on my phone, and I was like, what? And I looked at my thumb, and there was a cut. I don't know what happened to it, but I cut my finger, and I'm here. So, great.
So, fighting through it. Day-to-day decision.
Andre Kasha with this would be out for like a month.
That's right,
playing. By the way, we'll get into that in a little bit. We'll start, actually, with the Bruins' lack of 5-on-5 scoring. So, through two games, six periods, tie. Anderson tweeted out the exact minutes of the two games, which is always fun because it makes it seem way worse. They have 0 5-on-5 goals. And we both touted how deep this team was offensively to start. After two games, obviously you have Pasta injured. You have Craig Smith injured. You have Andre Kasha injured. Now, Craig Smith will be playing on Monday night, or he's at least expected to. What is wrong 5-on-5? What aren't they doing?
I just think they're mostly not keeping it simple and doing just the basic things that generates consistent 5-on-5 scoring. Because, again, we could also look into, as much as people hop on the fancy stats and it's like, expected goals don't mean shit. Well, they're not even doing that either. They're not even, like, generating these looks. Like, you're not even seeing in these games – you know, it'd be one thing if they weren't, if they were snake bit, but their, you know, Blackwood in those two games was making some crazy saves, or they had breakaways or chances right out in front. You really didn't see that. Like, the pucks were either being fired in from deep and they were getting blocked or turned aside. There weren't guys down low to kind of bury any of those second chances. Like, you're not even seeing those things, which are just the basic things that, that, you know, lead to grade A chances and goals. You're not seeing any of that right now. So I think for the Bruins, it's just about, you know, keeping things simple. It's the stuff that we're going to talk about. It's going to be the stuff that anyone listen to, and it's going to be like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. That's how you get goal scoring, but it's what they need to do, right? Like, it's, you can go low to high as much as you want, but if you don't have guys down low to convert on those chances, you're not getting anything. And I think a lot of that has more to do with the fact that a lot of the guys who you're expecting to, you know, add that added depth in scoring, like a DeBrusk or a Bjork, have been pretty much invisible this whole time. Like, we'll wait to see what happens with Craig Smith. I mean, I'm not going to judge him off of one game. And unfortunately, it seems like it's going to be something where he's going to be fighting through a little bit of a nagging injury right now, which is not ideal, right? For a guy who I think was viewed as a big 5-on-5 weapon for your team. But, I think it, a lot of it lies on, you know, guys like DeBrusk of just, you got to get down low and at least have the goalie react to you down there. You can't just be invisible for most of those two games and expect this 5-on-5 offense to get rolling. So I think that's the most troubling thing, is that it's not just the fact that, you know, they're getting these quality looks and, you know, the numbers just aren't going their way. It's the fact that there's no numbers to speak of, right? There's no high danger chances you're seeing getting generated at all.
That's the thing. And I also think it's sort of that low to high thing. I remember last year, you know, the Bruins spoke about after they played the Hurricanes, oh, we need to go more high to low or low to high. And what always kind of got me was, like, you don't have the caliber defense from the Hurricanes do. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you have Dougie Hamilton and Slavin, and, you know, you have all those guys down there. Jeremy Lauzon, how many shots has he gotten blocked in the first two games? Like, you're expecting the wrong guys to get these shots through. Like, for a guy like Jeremy Lauzon, who's playing top 4 minutes, and for the first time in his career, you know, playing with McAvoy on the top pairing or whatever, you know, you're already putting a lot on his plate. Getting the shots through, you know, should be simple, but for a guy like him, it doesn't seem to be. Now, again, he might score 3 goals tonight. Who knows? But I do think it's the lack of high danger chances. And as you mentioned, DeBrusk is invisible. Anders Bjork was invisible. Craig Smith really didn't do much in the one game he was there. Your best 5-on-5, or, you know, your best producer of offense thus far on 5-on-5 is Nick Ritchie. He had the goal, technically. It got tipped in.
And where was he on one, the power play goal, which is, you know, which is like a mop-up goal pretty much, but where was he there, and where was he on that goal that got turned back? Like, he was like in front screening and tipped
a pass. Like, that's why, like, Nick, I get the Nick Ritchie hate. I'm with you there. I think he's slow. Don't give him the puck in transition. You see it time and time again. They give it to him at the red line, and it's like just nothing. But he does his job in the offensive zone. He's been getting to the front of the net. He's looking for tips. He's giving you that. So you can't hate that. The problem is with DeBrusk. The problem is with Bjork. But again, you know, why are the Bruins 1-0-1? Because of the veteran leadership. Bergeron, Marchand, Rask. There are your three right there. That is why the Bruins are 1-0-1. So, I you know, I'm curious, another young guy that had a tough start and will be back in the lineup Monday against the Islanders. But, you know, obviously was in game one, out game two. I had very high expectations for him. So I'm hoping two of my biggest predictions were DeBrusk going to lead the Bruins in goals and Sednika is going to play his way into a lineup spot. Both of those things look very not promising. I hope you didn't bet on those. I even added Sneaker to my fantasy team. I dropped him. I pulled the plug, but I had to do it because I wanted to get someone else in there who was going to guarantee me points. But at any rate, Sednika comes out in game one, pretty irrelevant alongside Marchand and Bergeron, not there in game two. Bruce Cassidy is a lot of things, and he does a lot of good things. But one thing he's never really good at is letting guys get comfortable. It's like you have to score or do something big in your first couple shifts or you're off. And I get it. You know, he's trying to mix and match, find the right things. But kicking Stanika out after a game, I don't think that's the best move.
Yeah, I think it's one of those ones where he's got to have to balance. I think that, you know, his willingness to switch up the lines is kind of going to be magnified this year, especially just on the fact that they need to start, you know, collecting points in a hurry. They can't have, you know, if Sidnik is struggling in that role for four or five games, they have to pull the plug, do it after one game. That seems rather drastic. And, you know, I think that's also more or less a byproduct of, one, he's thinking going into that second game against Jersey. He's like, all right, Stanika like needs to still have kind of that reality check of like, you know, we're starting you on that top line, but you're not guaranteed the spot. But also I think Bjork played well in that first game, so he was going to warrant another look. And I don't know how it would have helped a guy like Frederick to get pulled out of the lineup when he's been probably their most promising forward, I would say, through the first
biggest
two games.
Spot. So, biggest bright
yeah.
spot.
Yeah, so you weren't going to take him out. You weren't going to, I don't think, take Bjork out after how we looked in game one, which I thought was pretty good. So it makes sense that, you know, if you had a chance to pull out Stanika for a game and give him kind of that reality check of like, all right, you're not guaranteed that spot, I could see it. It's just hopefully it's not like a situation where, you know, we talk about this a little bit later on where they play the Islanders Monday night and there's 2-3 shifts where they have nothing going in the ozone. And then it's Smith up in the top line, right? Like we have to at least see some traction being gained in, especially in in-game settings. Like if you want to go game to game and we reevaluate, you know, I could see that. But if it's, you know, 2-3 shifts with Bergeron and Mashi and Sonika's then just buried, then all right, you have to see what you got, because as much as he's a rookie, as much as he's going to have those challenges, Sonika still gives you more of a offensive ceiling than a lot of these other guys. I mean, we saw up in the Toronto bubble, as much as maybe he didn't lead to quality, as much as he didn't lead to points on the board, he led to a whole lot of good 5-on-5 chances, right? Like that's kind of what he did up in Toronto. So hopefully they kind of keep with him in these in-game settings when he's cleared to play, because I think at the very least, he's going to bring you at least some quality looks, which if you're playing with Bergeron and Marchand, usually means you're going to end up with at least a couple of great A chances.
You do wonder if Stanika's better with Krejci. And I think that was something we saw in the bubble a lot, was he was very good with Coyle and he was really good with Krejci and DeBrusque. And I think that's something that you know, you're going to see Monday night against the Islanders. You already saw it. Maybe it worked, maybe it didn't work. We're kind of going in the future here. Sucks at a games on a Monday night. That's why I love recording on Mondays, because there's never games Monday nights. But at any rate, I do think that, you know, for a guy like Stanika, you do need that consistency. He needs time. Again, no preseason. And again, no one had preseason. But for a guy like Stanika, Stanika needs preseason. Give him some time. And I think my prediction might come true. The other one, obviously, we mentioned a little bit, is DeBrusque. Now, DeBrusque is slated to be on the top line on Monday night. I don't think that's permanent. It definitely isn't permanent.
Plan on the off-wing either. He's usually too conducive to that, but
I think they are trying to do anything they possibly can to get this guy to produce. And that's an issue. That's a big issue. I don't know. DeBrusque was super inconsistent last year. You know, again, it's two games. They had no preseason. Their guys around the league are going to take time to ingratiate into things. But like, I found myself like not noticing DeBrusque in games. And that to me is the biggest issue.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, even in games where he was off last year, you'd at least see a few games where at least he was active on the forecheck, or at least, again, where does DeBrusque get all of his goals from? It's usually in Tyus, tipping shots. It's doing the stuff that a guy who's a 20-plus goal scorer consistently does year after year, and you're not even really seeing that so far. So for the Bruins, I mean, they've talked multiple times this offseason, this camp, about how, all right, DeBrusque, it's year four. You know, we need you to be more of a consistent guy out there. And, you know, you just can't have a situation like these two games, especially where you don't have Pasta. We don't know what's going on with Kasha right now, which you have to be concerned about with him based on the amount of concussions he's had. And that's what sure seemed like it was in that game on Saturday. So you need another guy outside of that top line to produce 5-on-5. And DeBrusque is usually the the most fitting candidate for it. But again, you can't have games like that where, I mean, he's pretty much invisible. Like when you're overshadowed by guys like Frederick or Richie or stuff like that. It's good for the Bruins in terms of their depth, but when a guy you were expecting to score, you know, not 20 goals in a shortened season like that, but over the course of an 82-game season, 20-plus goals, you can't have kind of no-shows like that.
That's exactly it, and that's the issue. And so before we get – I promise we'll get into good stuff. We'll get into positives from the first couple games, I promise. But I have to ask, based off what you've seen, are they a playoff team? Because again, now I projected them second. You did the same. I think on paper they're the second-best team in the East, but the Caps look pretty good through three games. The Flyers obviously look good. The Bruins, same 5-on-5 issues. You have injuries down the right side. The goaltending can't steal you. You know, the shorthand, you're not going to get power play goals every game. You're not going to get shorthanded goals every game. Rask and Halak are not going to be amazing every game. Are they a play, from what you've seen, are they a playoff team?
Yeah, I still think they're a playoff team. I mean, I think even with some of these struggles, I think you're still seeing, you know, they still just took things out on defense. But I think you look at Lozon, who was so-so in game one, but looked, I think, much better on Saturday. You look at Zboril, who I think has been pretty good for what his role has been.
Yes.
Which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit. Frederick looked good. The fourth line looks great, which is a step in the right direction from last year. Power play, they went 0-4 on Saturday, but it got 2 on Thursday. PK looks good. Again, I think once you get Pasta back, it helps out quite a bit. Again, it's not like, you know, you can't put a whole band-aid on your scoring just with Pasta coming back, but you still hope it's just two games. We'll take the David Krejci route, which is what he said yesterday. He was like, I'm not worried about it. It's two games. So again, you have to get more consistent 5-on-5 scoring because, if you have the same top heavy, scoring output at 5-on-5, then you're not going to go far in the playoffs. Cause as much as I think people want to talk about, you know, what do people talk about when it comes to how they've come up short in the playoffs the last couple of years? It's going to be goalie situation for some reason. Cause people still point out Rask in game 7 against the Blues. They talk about Rask leaving last year. They talk about, you know, they're too small and get bullied around. Look at the last few times they've been bounced out of the playoffs. They got, knocked around at 5-on-5 against St. Louis. I think they were outscored 14-4 at 5-on-5 in St.
Yes,
Louis.
Yes, and the top line did not produce.
Did not produce at all. Your highest scoring 5-on-5 forwards in 7 games against the Blues was Sean Crowley and Joakim Nordstrom with 5 and 3 points apiece.
Oh, that's right.
So, and as soon as Ryan O'Reilly's line tilted the ice in their favor against the Bergeron line, you were screwed. So people forget that. That's how they lost that one. And then last year, I think they were outscored again. I think they only had 4, 5, and 5 goals against Tampa. Like, you're not going to beat Tampa if you're not evening the ice in a majority of your time out there, right? It's 5-on-5 play. It's even strength play. It's not a specialized part of the game where you're able to tilt the ice significantly in your favor elsewhere. So, it's been a flaw of this team for years now, and it's usually what has ended up dooming them in the playoffs. They have to get better, but I'm not going to overreact after 2 games. Who knows after if they lose to the Islanders like 5-1 later today, then we might have some issues. But I still think they've got enough talent on this team. We've got enough guys who should be better. That I still think they're at very least a playoff team. And I still think they're going to be, you know, 2-3 seed when you look at how they are in the East.
I think they're a playoff team. I just have my doubts about if they finish second. I think that there's a good chance they finish third or fourth. I think there's a good chance they're fighting for a playoff spot or fighting to stay in one late. I mean, again, we haven't experienced that here since 16-17, I think, where they're like fighting to keep a spot. I mean, the past couple of years, they just kind of coast in the last month just because they have a spot. Last year, they were President's Trophy winners. So I wouldn't be surprised because, again, if you can't get the 5-on-5 scoring, if the lines behind Bergeron are not producing, if your only output is power play and Marchand and Bergeron on a penalty kill, again, it's only 2 games. But you can't win that way. You cannot win in the playoffs that way. You can't win long-term that way. And again, I think at some point when Andrei Kasha comes back, he might score a goal. Maybe.
Hopefully.
Maybe. One of these days. But I do think that there's some things you need to, but again, also there's no preseason games. They had a short training camp. I guarantee you'll see them playing better hockey in a week or two.
And I also think, too, you look at a guy like even Zvoral, who looks, I think, good. But also, I think someone mentioned on Twitter, like, he's also been playing in Europe. Like, there, I think you're seeing a lot of these guys who've been overseas, who've been playing, who look just noticeably sharper in terms of how they play. So I think that factors into it. It's tough to, like, view everything from the lens of, like, a 4 or 5 game sample to get a full measure of a team, or at least see when to start really evaluating them when it's
a 2-game sample.
Yeah. But, you know, it's tough doing that when it's a 56-game schedule and, like, every point matters. But I think you need to give them at least, you know, a week or two to see how they kind of get into a rhythm here. Because, Cassidy said today that the whole league seems pretty wide open in terms of defense has been kind of defense optional, and goalies haven't really been shopped to open up the air. So hasn't been the case for the Bruins, obviously. But I think you're going to need to see a few of these teams have some more time to get into the swing of things.
I saw someone tweet, they were like, you know, every game, and it's like, you know, bad goaltending, lots of offense, you know, no defense,
and then the goals.
And then the Bruins and the Devils, like, oh, we're going to play really tight, like, hockey, and no one's going to get any goals. And that was sort
like,
of the
it's
case.
It's like playing against, like, a Guy Boucher team. It's just, like, yes. Most uneventful hockey ever.
Have fun with the Islanders. I hope you guys had fun with the Islanders on Monday.
Yeah, exactly.
But, at any rate, they need to play a high flying. You need to play, get the Bruins with the Rangers right now. That's what they need. They need to play the Rangers. But let's get into some good. So you mentioned Zboril. I think Jacob Zboril was a very nice bright spot in the first 2 games. Looked good. Again, and Cassidy said this before the season, Jacob Zboril does not need to come in here and play like the 13th overall pick and change the defense.
Yeah.
All he needs to do is just be somewhat sound defensively, figure out what you can and can't do, and just get the puck in the hands of everybody else. And that's what he did. And he was good at it. He was fine. On his right side, Kevin Miller. You know, again, Kevin Miller looked really good through 2 games. And again, I think a lot of these guys who we had such low expectations for looked good, because I think maybe our expectations were extremely low. But I also think they look good. Yeah. I genuinely think Zboril looked pretty good. I think Kevin Miller looked really good. Mm-hmm. You know, he had the big hits. He had the fight. We did a video on why the fight really didn't matter, so you can go watch that if you'd like. But I think it's pretty obvious it didn't matter. Trent Frederick was really good in the first 2 games. He's like a more controlled Sean Corrali, in the sense that he's just chaos. He's complete chaos, but he's much more controlled chaos. And I have a question for you. Do you think Frederick's ever going to be get off the fourth or third line? Do you think there's ever a chance he's like on the top 2 lines ever?
I don't think so. I'd love to be pleasantly surprised. You look at a guy like Brad Marchand. Is he going to be Brad Marchand? No. Like, I don't think, if maybe he becomes
Trent
like
Frederick is the next Brad Marchand.
Yeah. Maybe he becomes like a Richie, where it could be like a top 6 guy of just being a guy who, you know, knocks in those pucks from grade A ice. But, no, I feel like he's more of a ceiling as a third, fourth line guy. Now, can he be a very, very good bottom 6 guy? Like, yeah, he could be a guy who could get, you know, 25, 30 points regularly, kind of like a Sean Corrali, who I think is a fourth line plus guy, right? I think Sean Corrali is a very good guy in your fourth line in terms of what he brings you. So I think if you have, Frederick in that role, it helps out your fourth line quite a bit. And I think you've seen that so far. I mean, it seems like everyone knows what Trent Frederick does well, right? He can beat the bag out of guys. He can, he's physical. He's more than happy to mix things up after the whistle. But is he going to score? Is he going to do anything outside of beating the shit out of guys? Which is, I think, the biggest concern, right? Because you can't field a fourth line, especially how the Bruins like their fourth line, where they can negate other teams with a guy who just wants to beat the shit out of you the entire time. As much as I'm sure hockey guys from yesteryear. Yeah. Exactly. It's not going to help you when the other team's, you know, Ovechkin's rifling one time as past Raz while you're trying to scrap with Tom Wilson. So, but no, I think he's looked good. He looks like he's, you know, rounded out his game overall. I think he's skating better. He's definitely, you know, added some weight. He had that, you know, that rush where he fought off the guy, still managed to get, that pass through the slot that, didn't connect, but it still was a good chance for that fourth line. Shot looks a lot better. Almost scored late in that game.
He did.
So, I mean, no, he looks good. I mean, are you going to expect him to get bumped up higher in the lineup? I wouldn't say so for this year, but if he can be an advanced, you know, reliable fourth line guy, like even like an Achari with maybe a little bit more offensive pop, then I think you'd be happy with what he'd bring you this year, because you just need to get that fourth line rolling. And so far, they haven't been a liability. Again, let's see what happens when they play against more, you know, daunting top six opponents. Like, Cal Palmieri's good. Jack Hughes should be a lot better this year, but they're not, you know, you're not playing against Panarin and Zibanejad or Ovechkin's line or, you know, Crosby Malkin. Or any, yeah, so we'll see what happens there. But so far, their turns have been pretty good.
Yeah, no, it was good. I thought they were great. The fourth line was the best line in both games, 5-on-5. But Frederick, it's funny. He really does. He does like just mix it up. I mean, Frederick is someone who Bruins fans are going to love. You know, his presser on Sunday where, you know, he's like, I can't wait to mix it up with all seven other teams. And, you know, it's always a good sign when someone's honest. And yeah. It felt like when he was asked about the beef with Subban, like he answered honestly. He enjoyed it. He kind of likes poking the flames. He likes standing up for teammates. So I think that is going to be something that's really interesting and really fun to watch throughout the year. I was saying in the video post game on Saturday that the Bruins really don't have any agitators. They have people who stand up to agitators, but they don't have anyone who, you know, really pokes the bear, so to speak, of other teams. But he could be that guy. I just don't, you know, he's on the fourth line, so I figure they're going to do it anyways, but maybe he does it more. I can't wait to see him in a playoff series he's against another team, you know, potentially seven straight times, and he's getting under the skin of whoever the Bruins play. Would have been great in those Maple Leaf series with Nazem Kadri and that would have been very, very exciting to watch. But, Frederick has looked great. Another person who's looked great, the goalies. Tuukka Rask, Yaroslav Halak. People are probably in their car listening. Like, it took them all this time to mention how good they were, but it's kind of, we expected it. No one was like surprised, by any of this. Rask, I think, you know, is the more encouraging one considering, you know, he's the starter. Mm-hmm. And what, it's funny when I was watching the games this weekend and I saw Matt Kalman write this, you know, the Bruins now have to sign Rask. And I agree. I think they have to re-sign Rask. I think the number one reason you do is Swayman and Vladar aren't ready.
Yeah.
But they're not. And so, like, Rask has to come back. Rask actually has to come back. Because, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. You know, a lot of people say, well, you know, Jordan Binnington took a team to the cup, and Anton Hudobin took a team to the cup, and, you know, all these fringe starters, young guys out of nowhere taking teams to cups, that's all well and good. But the probability of that you're going to hit on the guy who gets hot is so small. Why not stick with the probability of the guy who is elite and has a good track record of going to the cup final?
Yeah, and I think that's also the thing is consistency. Like, I mean, of course, yeah, Jordan didn't help them win a cup, but also what happened the next year where he shit his pants against Vancouver, and how's it looking so far? Getting absolutely lit up.
And Krug on all those defensive draws.
Yeah, we can talk about that another time, I guess, once we have a longer sample size. But like, Craig Berube's putting like Krug in, you know, only 20% ozone faceoffs. It's just negligence on knowing what the player's good at. Like, that's like, what are you doing, you idiot? Like, why are you putting him in a role like that? Where, listen, we all love Torrey Krug's game, but we also, I think the Bruins are well aware of how you can best make do with his abilities and account for some of the flaws in his game. If Craig Berube is just having him on the PK or having him doing D-zone draws, like, you get what's coming to you if you think that was the expectation going into it. So, anyway, after my rant with the Blues and Jordan Binnington, who sucks, I think it makes so much sense for the Bruins. And it's just, you map out just their plan and net, and it's just, you know, Swayman and Vladar just aren't ready yet. And as much as both those guys should hopefully be in a spot where they can get some reps down in Providence, let's be frank, like, it's a 20-plus game AHL season. They're not going to get the workload that they both need, especially a guy like Swayman, to all of a sudden be ready for training camp next year to make a push for the NHL roster, right? That'd be pretty cool, but it's not going to happen. Like, Jeremy Swayman's a fantastic goalie prospect, but 20 games in the AHL, which probably is going to end up being, what, 10, 15 for him, all things considered. It's not going to be enough to make that adjustment up to the pro ranks, because we've seen plenty of goalies come from college who look fantastic and then they just kind of can't adjust to it. Not saying Swayman's in that boat, but you need to see what these guys do in the pro level before just dropping them in the NHL.
Exactly. Zane McIntyre, the number
exactly.
one name I thought of there. But yeah, I think Rask has been great. I don't think that's going to be an issue at all. And that's one thing that I think, Bruins fans have become so comfortable with for the last, what, since 06, you haven't had to worry about the goalie.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's ridiculous. That's absurd. You and your and for all you Bruins fans from 2006 or 2005, even I think, to now, you've never had to go, oh, I don't trust the starting goalie. Now, some of you have said that about Rask, but you don't worry about him in the regular season. And I don't know why you worry about him in the postseason, but that's a whole other thing for a whole other day. But you haven't had to worry. You know, you're not these teams who can't find someone consistent in net. I mean, you know, you don't have two sucks. You have two goods, greats, whatever you want to say. But I think it's, you know, I think people, most, you know, the anti-Rask people, I don't think have realized yet that Rask is up at the end of this year, or maybe they haven't said anything on Twitter yet. Mm-hmm. But you know when that bad game comes, because it always does. And for every goalie, they can't re-sign him. They got to find someone else. And mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't taken a look at the goalie free agents for this offseason yet. That's probably a video we'll do later on as the season.
Jordan Binnington, baby.
Is Jordan Binnington a free agent?
Is he an RFA?
He's probably an RFA, I would think, because of his age.
Yeah.
I think he's an RFA.
Give me 1 second.
Send him, you know what? The Bruins will send him an offer sheet. That'd really,
Oh, no, he'd be a UFA. He's an expiry status UFA.
Okay, that's right. They signed him to a deal after he won the cup, and they kind of overpaid for him, but that's okay. Yeah. But yeah, so I don't think the goaltending crop is anything crazy for the free agents. Maybe it is, and I just haven't seen it yet, and people are yelling at their cars right now. But I don't think – nothing's beating Rask. Nothing is better than Rask. And I don't expect Rask to ask for more than what he's getting now, just because he knows he wants to stay here, which, again, is not a great thing for everybody, because everyone who said that is not a Bruin anymore. But that's the one bad thing.
Yeah.
But at any rate – we covered everything we had to cover. Actually, let's hit one more thing before we finish here. I was going to do a separate video on this for the YouTube channel, but we might as well hit on it here because I think Bruins fans are kind of curious about this. Keith Yandel. Keith Yandel obviously is going through some tough times with Florida management. The Iron Man streak was almost broken, and then they were like, nah, you're going to play. He scores a goal.
Of course.
Great. But obviously, you know, everyone connects Keith Yandel right back to Boston, and rightfully so, he's from Milton. So obviously he's a local guy. Should the Bruins go for him? I think we both have the same answer on this. Or, well, kind of, but should they go for him?
No, I don't think so. I love Keith Yandel's game. I think he's a great off-ice guy. He'd be hilarious to just have, you know, I think people laud kind of how he is in the room. But I think you just kind of break down the hurdles with making a deal like that. And it just seemed like there's too much for them to overcome. I mean, you got that contract, which is $6.35 million a year.
6.35.
Yeah. It's a lot to take on. Even if you switch some cash, like, do you want a guy who's 34, who has two more years after this year at that hit on your roster when you're either probably going to be looking to retool on the fly in a couple of years, or you're looking to rebuild? You want that contract kind of on your books when you have to sign McAvoy and Kahlo and Pastrnak, and in 2022 a guy like Barkov becomes a free agent. Like, do you throw a shit ton of money at him to keep this kind of team's window open? Like, there's a lot of different things they can do. Yes, you do, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But
I did it in my franchise mode. It worked out great.
Yes,
he was almost in the final. So,
but when you're doing any things like that, you can't be in a spot where you have a contract like Yandel's. And, you know, I think for as much as Yandel's still a very, very good power play guy, you look at his numbers outside of it and they're very, very ugly, unfortunately. Like 5-on-5, even strength defensively, he's not up to par for what the Bruins need. For a team like the Bruins who, you know, their identity is based on, you know, a structured defense, Ian doesn't really help you out there. And considering, you know, they're still going to see what a guy like Grizzlick has or McAvoy, it's not like it's an area where, like, their power play is completely out of gas and they need to get it rolling. Like, they're – if Yandel –
that was one area they were great at this weekend.
Yeah, if you know, Yandel was kind of like a a guy like even like Uyghur, who we talked about a few months ago, where he's a steady defensive guy, but also very good at 5-on-5 offensive generation. You look at him and be like, oh shit, okay, we will look at him, but Yandle doesn't really fit what they need. And when you factor in the money and a couple other things, it just doesn't seem like it's a good fit.
That's the thing. It's like you need the 5-on-5 offensive production. He doesn't really move the needle there. He moves the needle on power play points.
Yeah.
And also the money, you know, if he's taking up all that, if he's taking up a top four spot, potentially hurting the development of younger guys who might have higher ceilings 5-on-5. And again, the biggest thing is the money to me.
I was going to say too, the fact that he's got a no movement clause, I believe that stays with him if he gets traded to Boston, which means if he then is on the team for the expansion draft, you need to protect him. But if you have a no movement clause, you have to get protected. So if you get Yandle, you're losing Grzelcyk, Kahlo, one of those guys. So it's another thing that factors into with that no movement clause. So you're going to lose another really good guy if you bring him in.
This does not seem like the move for many teams, but especially the Boston Bruins.
Yes.
But so I thought we'd kind of go into the Keith Yandle stuff there for a little bit, because I think there are a lot of people who want Keith Yandle, and I get it. The numbers are great. The points are great. The surface level stuff from Boston or from Mass, you know, fun guy, would be great for interviews. Mm-hmm. But on the, you know, dive a little deeper, it's really probably not worth the Bruins' time. That is today's Bruins beat. We covered absolutely everything. Fun to obviously have all these things to talk about, Connor. Is there anything that you're working on at BSJ that people can look forward to?
Yeah, we're just going to have the regular day-to-day stuff covering the Bruins. We have a few projects we're working on that we're hopefully will be rolling out in the next couple of weeks. So you can follow all that over at bostonsportsjournal.com. Subscribe there, and you can follow me on Twitter at ConnorRyan_93.
Do all that. And for CLNS Media, I'm Evan Marinofsky. You Bruins Beat listeners, have a great rest of your week.